it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hockey News on the E podcast. I'm Jacob Stoller from the Hockey News alongside Justin Cohn from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. And for today's episode, we're going to be joined by Wichita Thunder head coach Bruce Ramsey. So he's the head coach for the Thunder. That's San Jose's ECHL affiliate. Bruce spent the last two decades coaching across almost every minor league under the sun, UHL, IHL, CHL, which is a Central Hockey League, ECHL, and some time in the AHL as well. Before that, Bruce suited up for just about every league I mentioned through the course of a near 15-year career playing. Without further ado, Bruce Ramsey. Bruce, how we doing?
Not too bad. You make me sound old. I've been around. Well-traveled okay. I mean, is what I'd say.
If you want me to really make you sound old, I mean, I'll tell you which year I'm born, and then you'll have a heart attack, maybe.
Yeah, probably will.
1999, but, you were finishing up your career. So how are things going?
30 years ahead of me. Jeez.
Exactly.
When I was born, they were landing on the moon, so that's how long ago it was. So. But
awesome.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. So, Jacob stole a little bit of my thunder. I was going to break him this news that I've known Bruce longer than Jake's been alive.
Wow. Okay.
So I was
now you guys are making me feel young. Perfect.
Well, I was thinking back a little bit. I don't know if Bruce even remembers this. So I had been covering hockey for 2 years, and this was my introduction to AA hockey. Was Fort Wayne was going to play a 2-game set in Asheville, North Carolina. And this was the season opener. This is United Hockey League. This is 1999. We get out there on a Thursday for a game Friday and Saturday. And they had just started making the ice like 2 days before the game. Do you remember this, Bruce?
Yes, I do remember it. Yeah. Yes, I do remember Asheville. Beautiful city. A little different, but a beautiful city.
Yeah, so we get out there. And Jacob, like the game is Friday night. And they started painting it, I believe it was Friday morning. And then, of course, the ice was not ready. And the solution was, let's just turn the cooler down. We'll just make it cooler. That'll fix everything. And so the players come out for warm-up, and the ice is just, like, cracking beneath their feet.
Oh, my God.
So they ended up having to cancel the game after keeping everybody there for, like, 5 hours. And we all had to stay, like, an extra 3 days. So that was my indoctrination to AA hockey. I'm still here, and Bruce was there to experience it with me.
Yes, we were. Yes, that was the first year of the Fort Wayne Comets in the AA.
Yeah. So Bruce, to skip ahead a little bit to present times, this is the first season that the Wichita Thunder is affiliated with the San Jose Sharks. You had previously been affiliated with the Edmonton Oilers. You know, what goes into a change like that from a coach's perspective? I mean, I would imagine there's some level of perhaps, maybe I'm wrong, that you have to integrate some maybe different systems or philosophies. What does that change mean for you when you're coaching now a different affiliate like this season?
I don't change very much. I'm going to keep doing my systems and, my persona and the way I coach. I'm a player's coach. I believe I treat the players the right way. I expect a lot, but I also give a lot and try to earn their trust. I think that's really important. We didn't have really a whole lot of help from the Edmonton Oilers over the years. Fort Wayne might be a little more blessed than we were. I'm not sure, but Justin would know more about that than I do. But, overall, it's been a good relationship so far. I had a few issues just with injuries and stuff like that, but the players that they have sent down have been here for most of the year. And, I've gotten better and better as time goes on. And, we've been blessed to have Strosman here for a few occasions, and he's done really well. And it's positive. You always want it to be a two-way street where both teams are helping each other. And for the most part, this has been that way.
Well, that kind of leads me into my next question. I was going to ask about goalies. You mentioned Strausmand. I know you had Zachary Emond at one point. You also have one of your guys in Evan Beitenheis. And I know he's played most of the game. So my question is, how do you balance that? When you have an NHL guy like Strausmand down with you guys and you still have Evan there, it's got to be tough to juggle you know, what the affiliate wants, when to play who. I mean, is there a lot that goes into a decision like that?
You know, I'm sorry, my dog just jumped up. This is Molson. Guys, everybody say hi. he's named after a Canadian beer, I know. But no, you know what? Evgeny Nabokov is the goalie coach for the San Jose Sharks and the San Jose Barracudas. And, you know, we have good chatter about, you know, what his expectations are. And, you know, we talk when Strauss is getting set down. He has kind of an idea of the, you know, the games he wants to play. So we definitely work with them. And I know Strauss is, it's a pretty easy decision, even though Evan Bightenheiss is an outstanding goalie. You know, Strauss has also been very, very good for us, especially. And when he comes down, if he wants to play and he's ready to play, he gets that ice time.
Two of the guys you've had on your team that are on NHL contracts, Timur Ibragimov and Dylan Hamelik, have spent time with the club. How have they been progressing? What have you seen from their development this year?
Yeah, well, Dylan has been, he's been injured for the most part since he's been here. He's actually back up with San Jose getting looked at. You know, he's had some lower body issues. So he really only played 3 or 4 games at his full complete level. And when he did play, when he was 100%, he was outstanding. If you look at his numbers, he had 5 goals in 5 games or something. So, you know, I wish I could have him for every game for the whole year. You know, injuries do happen, and they're working through some complications trying to get him back to 100%. Timur Ibragimov has been here the whole season, has improved immensely from the start of the year. When he first flew in here, he could barely speak English. Was very shy, very quiet, and now I have a hard time keeping him quiet. he's really blended in the locker room, has learned English really well, and his play on the ice has increased tenfold. You know, he's a very valuable asset to our organization. He kills penalties on the power play, works hard, just a good instance. Last night, one of our players got ran, and he stood up for him and actually fought the guy. So he's bought into, you know, what we're doing here. And he's been a real pleasant surprise because, you know, sometimes you get players, you don't know what you're getting. But, you know, he's been a big plus and a huge addition for us.
I think over the years, there's been a lot more European players that are in the ECHL than maybe in years past, where maybe they would bolt to overseas once they were signed there, whatnot. What have you seen from the league as an evolution, as a development league, that will keep a Ibrahimov or someone like that over on this side of the pond?
Yeah, we have a hard enough time just trying to keep North Americans here. It's pretty hard to compete with the teams in Europe, especially the higher echelon ones. And especially at this time of year, it's kind of a nightmare because they're looking to beef up for the playoffs. And, you know, we just can't compete financially with what they can offer. But, you know, that you just look at the ECHL and what it's done. So many players, I'm not sure what the number is, but I know it's probably around 600 or 700 players that have played in the East Coast Hockey League are now playing in the NHL. And, you know, sometimes there's a lot of late bloomers out there that just need a little bit of time and, you know, ice time. It's tough when you're in the American Hockey League. I coached there for 3 years. And, you know, if you're on the fourth line and you're playing 6 or 7 minutes a game, you know, you're not really improving. You're going to improve in practice maybe, but you need that game situation to, you know, get that quality, those quality reps on the ice to become a better player. And, you know, to be able to come down and play 20, you know, plus minutes a game and play in all key situations, I think is beneficial and a huge impact on, you know, their confidence and, you know, what, where they can go forward. So I believe a lot of European players are seeing that. And, you know, a lot of these European players, Timur excluded, have already played in North America, whether it's junior or other areas. So, you know, they probably kind of like the lifestyle and what's going on here. Obviously the world could be a turbulent place, but you know, North America is a pretty great place to play hockey, I'd like to say.
So what's the level of contact you have with San Jose? And also, second to that, are you contracted by the Sharks or by the Thunder? Like, how does that work?
No, I'm contracted by the Wichita Thunder. So
what's your point of contact with San Jose? Like, how does that work?
I deal with Joe Will and the head coach, John McCarthy. And, you know, we reach out to them, each other as much as possible, especially on key situations. So, you know, when they kind of let me do my thing here with the players that I have. So that's been great. And they don't come in and tell me what systems to run or anything else like that. They give me some free rein when it comes to coaching and being the GM of the team and taking care of the players. So, you know, the biggest thing for me is to make sure that when they get that opportunity to go up, that they're ready to play and jump in the line their lineup and, you know, make key to contributions when the time's needed.
You know how I know Bruce is a good coach? Because that was like the most well-behaved dog I've ever seen. I mean, hopefully I didn't jinx it, but I mean, that dog was just staring at you like you were doing a chalk talk. I mean, that was impressive. I just wanted to say.
Yeah, he's well coached as well.
wanted to ask you about a couple of the AHL guys. Mike Lewisky is one, 6 goals, 9 points, 43 games. And a guy I like, Dylan McPherson, who I believe is on an Abbotsford contract. Seven goals, 19 points, plus 11 in just, I believe, 14 games. Can you talk a little bit about those two guys and what they brought to the lineup for you?
Yeah, no, Mark Lewisky is a really young kid. He's fresh out of major junior. When he first got here, people underestimate the East Coast Hockey League and how really good it actually is. And they find out pretty quickly when they step on the ice and you start playing against other teams and you see the speed and the skill that's out there. And not just that, the toughness too. It amalgamates all attributes that you need to be a really good hockey player. And, you know, Mark has gotten better and better as the season's gone on. Maybe his points and his stats don't show his contributions to the team. But, you know, for the last 3 or 4 games, he's led our team in hits. He's fought. He stood up for his teammates. He's going to be a player that needs to find his role at the higher levels. And, I don't see right now, but maybe in the future as a power play guy or a penalty kill guy. But he's definitely very valuable to us is, that role player that goes out and finishes all his hits and competes and works hard and does all those little things that you need in order to be successful. So, he's getting better and better. He's 21 years old and 20, maybe 22 now. I'm not sure, but, I foresee him, having a bright future as well. Dylan McPherson, didn't take me long. I named him my captain probably about 3 weeks into the season. He's been a captain before. He's only 24 years old, is having a career year for himself offensively. But, the little things he does defensively, his work ethic, his compete level, it's hard to beat. And, he's just been a huge plus for us. Every game he shows up to play and plays 25, 26 minutes a game. And, I can't say enough positive things about him as well.
Not that this situation is unique to you guys, but Dylan being on an Abbotsford contract, so a different organization, does that present any challenges? I mean, I would imagine in some team situations, maybe they're running all the NHL team systems, and then you bring in this guy, and there are another team systems. I mean, is it different at all when that happens?
No, I haven't heard too much from them. He's got called up once early in the year, and for the most part, he's been here all season, so. When it comes to systems and stuff, he's just sticks with what we do. And it hasn't been much of an issue at all.
How do you kill time on long bus rides? I know that NHL and AHL coaches will do some sort of prep work on plane rides, but with a bus, I mean, maybe it's just me. I get car sick like crazy. I don't know how much work or film you can do on that span, but how do you pass time on the bus? And if you do some prep, what do you do?
Yeah, I do a lot of video. I do special routines before every game, power play, penalty kill. We do 5-on-5 in the morning. So obviously I want to be prepared for that. And we do have some long bus trips. But, I'm a big reader. I got Audible books going. I got Kindle books going. So that definitely helps me pass the time and drowns out the noise of the boys in the back of the bus. And and all the snoring that's going on for the ice sleeping. So, Our schedule actually has been pretty good this year. We've only had a couple long bus trips. We fly to Boise, Idaho, and we fly to Utah. So, but we do have a couple zingers coming up here that are going to be fun.
What have you been reading these days?
Kind of a mixture. I like history, and I do a lot of fantasy. What books I was just reading? I liked the series of... let's see, Robert Jordan, Wheel of Time. I've read all those books. I don't know. The list goes on. I read a lot. I go from one series to the next, and it keeps my mind occupied. A lot of times you just got to keep your mind off this game sometimes, or it overwhelms you. So, I love my books, that's for sure.
It's funny because Jacob asked you about riding the bus. I actually rode the bus with the Comets once when Bruce was on the team, and this was – I think that might have been that same season, 2000. But there were no sleeper buses then, right? Like everybody was just sitting upright for 18 hours. Like it's got to be a lot easier now than it was when you were playing, right?
Yeah, I don't know how we did it. I couldn't survive those trips anymore at my age with my back. But, you know, we have sleepers now. So, you know, the guys can watch TV. They play a lot of cards. You know, they talk a lot about things that I probably don't want to hear about. So, but, you know, it's all good. I like those bus trips. Don't want to have too many of them, but they definitely bond the team together in a good way.
Well, Jacob, you may not know this, but Bruce was a legitimate tough guy in his playing days. Actually was the United Hockey League's all-time penalty leader, if my memory serves. So as a guy who played a tough physical brand of hockey, you know, when you put your coaching hat on, and I know you've been coaching for a lot of years, was it hard to put that element of the game or that element of your mentality aside, as now you probably want some cooler heads from some of your players?
Oh, definitely. Well, it didn't take me long when guys started fighting and then injuries started piling up. And as a coach, you're losing valuable players because they're fighting. It gets to a point where you're like, okay, I don't want you fighting anymore because I need you playing. So you don't realize that, but, you know, it seems like I've had some bad luck that way over the years where a player fights, and next thing you know, he's out for four or five games or longer. So, yeah, you know, there's definitely a huge part of the game. You know, we had a fight last night, and for standing up for each other and protecting your players and setting a tone, I think it's very valuable. But, yeah, you know, you're always under your breath going, please, please don't get hurt whenever I see guys dropping the gloves. Because, you know, at this level, you have a limited lineup and a limited roster, and it's hard to replace good players. And, you know, I'm dealing with that right now because my roster is pretty thin. And, you know, I'm searching the SPHL to find that next magic guy, but it usually doesn't happen. So we'll, you know, definitely don't want to lose guys to unnecessary injuries if I don't have to.
But in a general sense, like, you still think fighting has some importance in the game, at least?
Yes, I do. I think it still has a huge part of it. And, you know, I used to fight probably 30 plus times a year, and I would have been suspended the whole season if I played in the East Coast Hockey League nowadays, because I think you're only allowed 10 games before you start getting suspended. So, you know, that's definitely limited it. But, you know, it's a big lift on the bench, and it's a big part of, you know, the boys standing up for each other and building camaraderie throughout your team, is knowing that each other, every player has each other's backs no matter what happens, no matter who it is.
All right. Well, Bruce, thank you so much for coming and joining us. We really appreciate it. And, you know, if you were my coach, I bet you my parents would be very happy because that dog is very well trained.
All right. Thanks, guys. It was great to be on. I appreciate you.
Absolutely. Take care.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Thanks again to Bruce for coming onto the show. Just, Justin, even fill me in a bit. So how did you meet Bruce? Was it when he was playing for Fort Wayne?
Yeah, I mean, it feels so long ago, but he was the player assistant coach,
right,
in 1999-2000, which was the first year I covered AA. Like, I had been covering the old IHL, which was right below the NHL and competing with the AHL, and then moved down to that level. And Dave Allison was the head coach, who had coached the Ottawa Senators. I believe he might have been their first coach. I'm getting vague on that one. So he was a player assistant because he had known Dave Allison forever. And this is a different era. I mean, Bruce fought all the time and was not even their biggest fighter, but was a really gritty player, and then got into coaching. And he, you know, he was kind of connected with guys like Todd Nelson and Jeff Nelson, and coached in places like Muskegon and Port Huron, and assistant in the AHL. So he's been to a lot of places, Tulsa. I meant to ask him, he actually coached a team called the St. Pete Parrots. I think that was his first head coaching job, but really nice guy. And, you know, just brings me back to riding the bus with that team during a playoff series as a reporter. There was just so many funny stories. And they were not waiting for Justin to file his stories, I'll tell you that. They were like, let's go. We're getting back to Fort Wayne. We don't care whether you're ready. You're either coming or not. And there was just a lot of funny stuff from that.
How did that get arranged that you were on the team? But, like, was that a matter of the paper saying to the team, we've got a writer, can you come on the bus? Or, like, how did that – I know it's a different era, I know a different time. I'm just curious.
Well, yeah. Well, no, I wanted to do a story about what it was really like on the bus. They had a weird wackadoodle playoff format that year. I believe it was maybe a best of three. And so we had to go to Asheville, I think, for just one, maybe two games. But no sleeper buses. So what I remember is I was sitting there. Nobody wanted to sit anywhere near the reporter. So Bruce was across the aisle next to me. I was behind a guy named Dan Ronan, who was studying for his law school, like his LSAT, which was a funny thing. But I do, this may sound dumb or it might be funny, but I remember we stopped at a truck stop on the way back, like in Tennessee. And for whatever reason, they had this rack of hats, like baseball caps. And we're just looking through it. And there were like teams that Bruce Ramsey had played for. So the one I remember was the San Antonio Dragons. He's like looking at this thing like, I can't believe they have this at a truck stop in Tennessee. I played for this team, you know, 10 years ago. And I could see he was eyeing it. So I bought him that hat. And I think I gave it to him like at the end of the trip. And it used to be a joke. Like I would run into him, like he'd be coaching in Port Huron. He'd be, look there. And like behind his desk would be like the San Antonio Dragons hat. But, you know, we touched on it. So different now. These guys get to sleep. They get to watch TV. They got internet. I mean, and they still complain about it. And I don't blame them for complaining about it. But I saw it when it was a little bit rougher than it is now.
Absolutely. Let's get back to the present day, though, where, as you said, there's more Wi-Fi, more sleep, and better amenities all around. This week, our prospect of the week is Pascal LaBerge of the Kansas City Mavericks. 24-year-old center. He was actually a second-round pick of the Flyers in 2016. He's under contract with the Coachella Valley Firebirds of the AHL. He's Kansas City's leading scorer. He's got 43 points in 41 games. That's tied for 12th in league scoring as well. What's the 4-on-1 on LaBerge?
I it's hard to separate sort of what you know, which was he was a really high draft pick.
Yeah.
And what you're seeing, you know, him do in the ECHL. Like when I watch him, I'm like, this is a really good player. Like,
right.
Sort of like, what's he doing down here? And then you kind of go into the backstory and you're like, oh, okay, well, maybe there's something we don't know. But, you know, look, I like to judge guys on what they're doing now. This is still a pretty young player, 24 years old. I still feel like he's got upside. You know, he's not really big. He's 6'1", 192, but he plays bigger than that size would imply. So he's been on a tear lately. And, you know, he just does a lot of different things. He's got a really nice shot. He's got deceptive speed. But what I really like is he makes some really nifty passes. So, you know, he had a game last week. I think it was a goal, 3 assists. Watched a lot of that game. And, you know, he was setting up goals in all sorts of ways. There was one where he's chipping it just to a guy rushing up. It was a play at the offensive blue line. So he established the zone, then chipped it to a teammate. Bang, goal. Then later in the period, he's on the other side of the ice. He's down low, backhand pass, bang, goal. Then there's another where he has a breakaway goal. So he's doing it in a lot of different ways, and you can absolutely see the potential of how this guy was a high draft pick. And, you know, I know I'm giving you a long-winded answer, but if you look back, I mean, he got picked in 2016. 16. Right, 2016. So the next season, he suffered what was a really predatory hit by Zach Malatesta. That's a guy that we've also seen in the ECHL now. That left LaBerge unconscious. This is QMJHL play. Malatesta got suspended, I believe it was 7 games. So if you look back at the reporting of the time, and it sort of makes some sense, he suffered a really bad injury and might have been a little kind of gun-shy for a while because the things that he was doing well, which was scoring, which was being a hard-nosed player in the corners, mm-hmm. positions where you can be in a vulnerable position. So my interpretation is that that affected him for a little while. But this isn't to say that he was not a good player after that. Was a very good player. Just never quite realized that potential of when he was a second-round pick of the Flyers.
Absolutely. I mean, how can you blame the guy? Like, I don't know how you're not timid after a big concussion like that. But with that said, as you mentioned, still a younger player getting some momentum because the last 2 years, where he's been a top-tier player in the ECHL, you have to think he'd be the first guy out for Coachella Valley, right? Like last year, he got recalled and, you know, played a game the year before as well. He's kind of always been that bubble guy. I would assume it's the same for Coachella Valley.
Yeah, I mean, one thing to note, though, Coachella Valley is really good and it's really deep. So, you know,
a lot of veterans.
Yeah, 37-4. It has the AHL's number one offense with 3.73 goals per game. So it's tough to crack that lineup if you are an offensive-minded player. But I agree with you. He has to be on their radar. If you look at LaBerge's last five games, he's got 4 goals, 11 points, and is plus six. And this is a team that can be a mixed bag when it comes to defense. But he does a lot of good things on the power play. He's got 4 goals, 12 points on power plays. So I absolutely see an opportunity if there's some injuries, there's some call-ups, who knows what happens after the trade deadline, all kinds of situations that you could see. But it is surprising to me that he hasn't seen much of a look this year on the first year of a deal with Coachella Valley. But I just don't think there's a spot for him right now.
He's definitely a prime Europe candidate. I'm sure someone's going to give him a pretty fat offer after this year. But how's Kansas City doing this year, by the way, like just as a whole?
Well, you know, we've talked about the Mountain Division, and it is very good. So they're a fourth place team in a very good division. I think their momentum is not great right now. They're 3-6-1 in their last 10 games. But I saw some things last week. They had a big win against the Indy Fuel. The Indy Fuel, very good team this year. So I thought that was an impressive win. They had a big game with Wichita. Kansas City, you know, this I think speaks volumes about what LaBerge could do, because offensively, Kansas City is only middle of the road. They're 16th in the league. They only average 3.24 goals per game. Even on the power play, they're really just a middle road team. So for him to put up these offensive numbers without necessarily having all that much help, I think speaks volumes to what he's been able to do. The Mavericks have no players right now in NHL contracts, but they do have a bunch on AHL deals at all sorts of positions. Callum Booth, Jake McLaughlin, Luke Stevens, Tristan Mullen, Jeremy McKenna, who's a player I really like. He's, I believe, the leading goal scorer for that team. They have Nick Pastajov, and Hugo Roy is also a very underrated skilled player. So there is a lot of talent there. I could see Kansas City being a factor, you know, in a tough division. If they can hold on to playoff position in a tough division, they could be a team that's really battle tested. But they're going to need to, you know, hang on to a lot of these AHL guys down the stretch if they can.
I would think that LaBerge will still be there because Coachella Valley called up Mullen when they need someone who makes more sense. He's more of a bottom six kind of guy. So with that said, looks like LaBerge could be there for the stretch run for a potential playoff run. That's big for them. Let's now go to Coast, Justin Cohn's news, notes, and quotes. Justin, take it away, man.
Well, I feel like I should start in my backyard with Ryland Peranto, who had kind of a ridiculous save for the Comets in their sixth straight win last week. How do you describe it? We describe it as the Scorpion. He is facing Tyler Bush of the Iowa Heartlanders. Bush is about 15 feet out, point blank range. And Peranto dives forward. And as the puck is sailing over his head and his back, he kicks his legs up and basically propels the puck back at Tyler Bush. Number one play of the day on SportsCenter. It's getting a lot of love on a lot of different platforms. But some interesting things to note about Peranto. This is Fort Wayne's number two goalie. He actually was one of those guys that was booted to the curb by the Toledo Walleye this season because they had Sebastian Cosa and company. So Peranto has looked really good with Fort Wayne, even with Ryan Fanti down in Oilers prospect. And Peranto today, right before we recorded this episode, gets called up to Abbotsford of the AHL. So a situation where a backup goalie gets called up to another AHL affiliate. And, you know, we're, as we record this, kind of on the eve of the trade deadline, I've seen some conjecture, you know, does this mean Vancouver's doing something? They needed a guy like Peranto. But the point here is you make a big save in a big spot. And this was a big spot, 2-1 game. They were on the penalty kill. It can get you a notice. And he is quickly called up to Abbotsford. So wanted to start there. And we mentioned Sebastian Cosa. Interesting things going on in the net in Toledo, where John Lethemon, who is on an AHL deal with Grand Rapids, has really looked good. He has won 7 straight starts. He is now 11-1-3 for the Walleye, as Cosa has kind of been a mixed bag. And maybe you have an opinion on this, Jacob. I was reading some analysis of Cosa in The Athletic, and one thing they said was that he's got a lot of work to do, which I agree with. He has been very inconsistent. But they made the comment that the ECHL is notoriously hard on goalies. And I have been thinking about that comment since I read it 3 days ago.
Probably is.
I feel like, yeah, I could see how people would say that.
Well, but... okay. Without having read that, Let me say what I would you're talking about Scott Wheeler's prospect rankings, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so what I would think Scott means is because of the chaos of the league, that could be difficult. Like, you know how you read up people say they go from the NHL, sorry, the AHL to the NHL or ECHL to AHL, and it's easier because not as chaotic. Like, it's more like it's easier in the sense of like there's not as many mistakes and certain things like that. Whereas in a level below, there's more chaos. And I feel like if you're someone like Kosa, you've played junior where you've dominated, and these are all skilled and the best players your age, right? And then you go to a league of men that are two notches below the NHL, more physical, like big and physical, and they're just sloppier than the AHL or NHL per se. It's probably a lot of, probably a war zone in front of the net. That's what I would think initially. What do you think?
Well, I think you're looking at it probably from a different perspective than I am, and yours is certainly fair. I mean, if the discussion is, you know, would a player like Kosa be better served to still be in juniors versus the ECHL? Okay, you can make that argument.
That's but my argument, yeah.
Is it more difficult or harder on a goalie than if he were in the AHL is my interpretation of it.
Okay, I see what you're saying now.
Because, and I can argue it a lot of different ways. I mean, yeah, but you're on to something. You're in the ECHL. You're probably, you could be playing 3-3 nights. You're right, you know, there's going to be defensive lapses. You could be Kosa. Part of Kosa's issues is that Toledo's defense for much of the season was terrible. Right. So he wasn't getting the help. But one could argue he's also not facing the quality offenses or the quality shooters. So right. I think I tend to lean toward what Wheeler and the Athletic is saying is true, that it can be notoriously difficult on goalies. But I'm also not sure that I think it's situational. You know,
well, what's your hesitancy? Is it, are you saying more so you don't want to blanket term it to be in general because of what you're saying with like Toledo defense, for example?
Because I think it implies that you're doing a disservice to a goalie prospect, and there is a mountain of evidence that goalies have ascended from the ECHL to the NHL, even older goalies. The thing is, they're older, but you know,
But Justin, you're right. But how many have gone from at 20 years old?
Not a lot, but that's
probably the argument. I bet you, I would say that the counter to that would be the ECHL is a good place for goalies, but most of the time they're going from, say, NCAA to the ECHL, or they usually don't have junior eligibility, if ever. I'm not going to make an outlandish statement without knowing, but this doesn't really happen usually. So I feel like when you're comparing it to junior or the AHL or whatever, for in this circumstantial situation, it might be a hard thing for him, but I get what you're saying. Maybe it's not like notoriously bad for goalies in general.
But I would also say, you know, to your point,
we're going back and forth here. To your point.
We could go on this forever. So,
The
last thing I will say on it is
no.
I think there haven't necessarily been enough opportunities. Like teams have been hesitant, and maybe it's because they perceive the ECHL to put their big goalie prospects down here, but. Right. It's not unlike anything else where we sit down here at this level and say, well, why do you have a guy playing one out of every three games in the AHL?
Oh,
when
for
you,
sure.
You could get him the work down here.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. The point is, it's interesting because I hadn't necessarily thought of it a lot about, is it notoriously hard on goalies? And now I am thinking about it, and Kosa's the perfect example for this. But I do think the argument is, if you don't think he's ready for the ECHL, then he should have been in juniors.
I'd agree.
That's the big thing. If this guy is really NHL level, it's not just him, anybody. If they're really a prospect, they should be able to handle this even at age 20, 21. Now,
Right. Maybe
they didn't give him enough help. They should have given them better defensemen back there. I think you could absolutely argue that one. But
I think it's also it's a double-edged sword. Just one last point, I swear. It's fine. I love talking about this. It's a good point. But I guess the one problem is, because we just talked to Bruce, and in his situation, I know everyone's different, but he's got kind of free reign in it seems like personnel-wise, right? Okay, so you could say Grand Rapids should have signed some AHL guys for, you know, to be in Toledo. Some AHL contracts, put them down there. This decision on Kosa for sure happened after free agency, right? So then it comes down to, all right, you're going to bring more guys or whatever. I think the window's so narrow to plan for it that it's kind of tough. And I think the problem here is, okay, the debate probably ends, it starts and ends with, should they have turned him pro? Not so much, was the ECHL the right point? Because I agree with you. Like, there's no, if he can't keep up there, I don't know how he's supposed to be in the AHL. I fully agree with that. Easier or not, or whatever, I completely agree with that mindset. But the ECHL is also getting a lot better over the years. So you're right. We haven't seen situations like this because there hasn't been any that have been possible.
I'm going to make a comparison here that I can't believe I'm about to make. Okay. I think it's kind of brilliant. But look, if you're in baseball and you have a first round pick as a pitcher and you send him to single A Fort Wayne, you're making very sure that you have a catcher there that you trust, that you want with him there.
I agree. Okay?
This is his guy. I mean, I do see them get called up together all the time. This is his guy. So I don't think it's crazy to say Detroit Red Wings, Grand Rapids, if we're sending Kosa there, we want to make sure he's surrounded by some guys, and we are going to beef up your defensive core like you wouldn't believe. I don't see it too often, but I think there's something to be said because you're right. You know, this is kind of a relatively new situation where you have a highly talented goalie like that in the ECHL kind of for the duration like this. But I don't know. Now, you know, that's what I would have done. I would have made sure he had the tools around him so he doesn't get hung out to dry like he has a few times. But again, Toledo has really turned it around. They've been one of the best teams in the league lately. Coast has been a part of that. So I don't want to say that they're still a mess because they are not.
Disregard what we just said, everyone.
Yeah. But John Leatherman has been outplaying him. I think that is really fair to say. So the AHL contracted guy outplaying the NHL contracted guy. But that's a good conversation there.
So February 15th is the overseas deadline for the ECHL. March 16th is the trade deadline. Just quickly here, what is the overseas deadline for the ECHL?
Well, it's very relevant because that's the last time you can get players coming back from Europe so that they can still play in the league. So every year there are a bunch of guys that, or at least big names that people speculate on. So, it's a big way to improve your team because you get those high level guys coming back, or, you know, there's always guys unhappy over there. And you also see the inverse, like we've seen a lot of big players in the last couple of weeks leave the States to go to Europe. Right. So in Fort Wayne, Josh Winquist was a great example. Maybe their best offensive player up and decides to go to Sweden with very little notice. And that really dealt them a blow. And that we've seen that with Toledo. Cole Fraser did that. So it's a very important date. I argue probably way more important than the trade deadline itself, because we don't necessarily see a lot of those huge deals. But that European deadline is something that fans have become very attuned to.
Last thing before we wrap here, tell us about what's happening in Trois-Rivières.
Yeah, so, you know, it's a team to watch right now because, you know, still a young team, same ownership group as Newfoundland and also as Iowa, and they're not doing great on the ice. Attendance is dropping. Players have left. Matthew Brodeur recently retired. Early in the season, their coach, Eric Bélanger, he left the team to go coach juniors in the Q. So you've got Marc-Andre Bergeron, who's the VP of GM, who is coaching the team. The whole thing here, the point is, it's a situation we need to watch because this was an area and a market that a lot of people were very excited about. And I don't think it's necessarily meeting the expectations. Now, absolutely 100% pandemic had a huge to do with that. But, you know, what they thought was going to be the huge landing place for the French Canadian players, it's now becoming a little bit more challenging. And they're not having the cohesive relationship with the LNAH that I thought. Instead, it seems to be almost a little combative. So it's something to watch, especially when you've got an owner that has three teams and two of those teams are seeing their attendance really drop, and that being Iowa and Trois-Rivières. So certainly something to watch as we move forward.
Absolutely. But let's end it right there. We went a little bit. I kind of hijacked your segment, Justin. I apologize. Thanks for including me though. Cause
no, that's what I want. I want you talking back to me on some of this stuff.
You're pretty scary. I got to say, as a co-host, you're pretty intimidating and you've been hazing me a lot. So, I mean, thank you for including me for once. Completely sarcastic there. Anyways, thank you everyone for joining us. Bruce, again, thank you so much. Hope to have another coach on soon. Maybe even Bruce another time. But for this week and for now, we're going to stop it right there. So thank everyone for listening. We'll see you next time.